5.
You ready?
4.
I was born ready.
3.
Just keep the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
2.
We're really doing it though, aren't we, buddy?
Yeah.
1.
Hello, people of the world. This is Bilal Mazzacone here talking about movies as I do from time to time. How is everybody doing? I would just like to start by saying that I'm very excited to be hosting this podcast. I cannot wait to share my thoughts on film with you guys, whoever may be listening right now. This is what I do, and I love doing it. In terms of guests slash co-hosts, the hope is to get people like that on very soon. This first episode is sort of me finding my feet, finding my sea legs, and trying to figure this whole thing out. So I really hope that you'll bear with me and that we will have a good time here together for this inaugural episode of Malama's Podcast, Take 5. So, I would like to begin with a throwback. I would like to address throwbacks, films, classics that I find are either forgotten or have endured the test of time just because of how amazing they are. I think that it's a shame when we either stop talking about movies that are great or when we talk a lot about movies that might not actually hold up now. So here's where we address those things. Today, the throwback is going to be Spy Kids from the early 2000s, the movie Spy Kids, one of my personal favorites from that period in my life. Does it hold up? Well, I have seen the film recently, and I can tell you that there are some things that need to be addressed, most notably in the special effects department, but I will get into that very shortly. The movie, it stars Antonio Banderas, Carla Gugino, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, I'm very sorry, I apologize, Carla, did not mean to offend you. We've got Danny Trejo, Cheech Marin, interesting cast of characters here, Alan Cumming, Robert Patrick, if you know Terminator Judgment Day, he's in there for a bit, Tony Shalhoub, it's a really fascinating cast of people the more I start to think about it. Spy Kids centers on the lives of two young children, Carmen and Junie, the children of two former spies, and via a whole wacky just assortment of situations and mishaps, these two children end up finding out about their parents' secret lives as secret agents, and they themselves are forced to go on this mission slash adventure to save their parents and to save the world. Let me just start by saying that this is a fun film. Very, very fun, very, very enjoyable, a great time. It's the kind of movie, with any film, you definitely have to suspend your disbelief in some regard. There's no film out there that I would actually consider 100% realistic in every aspect, and I don't think there exists a film that is 100% realistic in every aspect. Just by virtue of making a movie and editing footage into a story, you are eliminating any chance of the movie being exactly like real life. When it comes to Spy Kids, though, there might be a little more suspension than in other cases. Some ridiculous stuff happens in this movie, but you do have to remember the target audience of this movie. When I was young, when I first saw this movie, when it came out, this was my jam. I ate this movie up. I loved it. I loved all the action set pieces. I loved all of the humor. I loved all the colors. I absolutely adored this film and everything it was about. Looking back, right now I'm an 18-year-old, adult male. There are certainly things about the movie that I wouldn't necessarily find entertaining today, but I don't consider this a bad movie, actually. I don't think it would be fair to call this movie a bad movie. There are certain things you might want to excuse when you're talking about the fact that this movie is marketed towards children, it's aimed towards kids, because, I mean, what kid doesn't want to be a spy? I mean, that is the pinnacle of childhood fantasies. I mean, you want to go to space, you want to be a swashbuckling pirate, and you want to be a spy. That is just sort of, at least I did when I was young. And, I mean, just think about, you're sitting at home, you're bored with your life. You're, 8 or 9 years old, and then all of a sudden you find out that your parents are secret agents and that you have the potential to be a secret agent just like them as a kid. That is just absolutely amazing. And the kid in me still finds that aspect really, really fun. And so when I watch this movie as an adult, I still kind of, there's a part of me that still goes, yeah, I am into this. I'm having a good time. I put myself in these characters' shoes, yada, 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 whatnot, whatnot, whatnot. On the flip side of that, this movie is camp to the max. It is one of the campiest, cheesiest movies I have seen. And right now, I'm not even getting into specifics with the special effects or whatnot. This movie is very, very corny in a lot of senses of the word. Now, does it work in certain places? I certainly think so. Yeah, I think this movie has a brand of humor that you just sort of have to accept going in. And I think that, you know, if you are open to the idea of finding these things funny and enjoyable and fun, because it is quite a wacky movie, if you're open to that experience, then there's no reason you shouldn't enjoy a lot of the humor in this movie, even if you're an adult. That being said, there are definitely jokes that fall flat, definitely moments of humor, especially very awkward physical comedy. Certain things happen, and it at times it can verge on being disturbing and just kind of strange. You can tell that when, I don't know, storyboarding, coming up with character designs, whatnot, when visualizing, pre-visualizing this movie, you can tell that the creative team, you know, led by Robert Rodriguez, you can tell that they were definitely looking to do something a little different, a little, I hesitate to use the word scary, but it can get scary. You know, this isn't a spoiler for the movie, and honestly, you shouldn't be really concerned about this movie being spoiled for you. It's a very old movie. There aren't a lot of plot twists in the movie, but the villain of the movie, played wonderfully by Alan Cumming, and I use the word villain lightly because he has many dimensions to his character. This character has a machine, device room, whatever, machine, device, that transforms human people, human adults, more like, into these ridiculous cartoonish creations. He designs these weird, wacky things, and then he has a machine that will turn you into the thing he designed. He has this little ball of clay, he molds it into whatever he wants, and then the machine makes you look like that. And there are moments where you just kind of, your jaw just sort of drops, and you go, oh my god, that's kind of terrifying when you see some of the things that these adults are turned into. Also, you know, there are the Thumb Warriors. If you've seen the movie, you know exactly what I'm referencing. There are these henchmen that are just thumbs. Their heads are thumbs, their arms and legs are thumbs. It is confounding, to say the least. Still great, still fun, just really, really ridiculous. But getting more into the, you know, CGI and whatnot, there are practical effects used in this movie, but one of the things that kind of shocked me when I watched this movie recently was that, as a kid, I think I thought that this movie was more practically done than it actually was. As a kid, there are more things in this movie that I thought were actually real, more sequences that I thought were actually done in camera. Watching it now, I realize that a lot of stuff is added in post-production. A lot of stuff is green screen, a lot of stuff is CG animated. And the thing about Robert Rodriguez is he really excels. He is a big proponent, a big champion of the sort of B-movie genre, if you want to call it that. He's great with B-movies, you know, with those sort of like exploitation slash horror, you know, grindhouse flicks. And so working on a low budget has always been Robert Rodriguez's thing. And so even in movies that are CGI heavy, like Spy Kids, Spy Kids 2, Spy Kids 3, or like Sharkboy and Lava Girl, movies that kind of necessitate a lot of computer animation, it's not the most expensive computer animation. You can tell that he is still working on a low budget. So when characters are in front of a green screen, it is very, very noticeable. That being said, it is also very consistent. The issue with crappy green screen in film generally comes about when a director or a filmmaker uses green screen in places where it stands out, where it sticks out, and you just kind of go, oh, that's obviously not real. The thing about Robert Rodriguez is whenever CGI is used, you know about it. There's never there are never really shots that are better than others. Like, he has no qualms about the fact that the CGI looks very, very fake and very cartoony. And he, in a lot of ways, it almost feels intentional because he is working on that small scale, low budget scale. That is just kind of what he does. And so you go into this movie and you just kind of say to yourself, if I accept the fact that this movie looks like this, it honestly isn't that bad. Anywho, Spy Kids, definitely worth checking out. If you have kids or younger siblings or younger cousins or anybody that you know that is a kid and they haven't seen this movie, because this is, if they are a kid now, this movie is before their time officially, you're going to want to educate them and show this movie to them, because this movie really is worth the watch. Keep in mind all of the things that I just said, because they are quite, quite noticeable. Thank you, and that was the throwback. Now let's get into what this episode is really, really about at its core. Today I want to discuss superhero films, more specifically the direction that the MCU is taking, and most specifically I want to talk about Avengers Infinity Wars Part 1 and 2. I want to talk a little bit about where it looks like the trajectory of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is headed, and what problems and roadblocks might lie in the paths of these producers and screenwriters and directors who are trying to put these movies together. The reason I'm discussing this now is because we seem to be sort of existing in this whirlwind of superhero film releases. Batman v Superman just came out. Definitely give that a watch if you haven't already. I don't want to spend any time in this particular episode discussing that movie. If you know me, you've probably already heard me talk that movie to death. To make a long story short, I loved it for a lot of reasons. One of my favorite films, actually. Please, please, please go watch it. But, you know, that just came out. We have Civil War coming out very soon, early May. We have, and then we have another Marvel release later this year, Doctor Strange, and then we have another DC release later this year, Suicide Squad. So we seem to be existing in this time where just to put it plainly, for the next 4 years, there will be four superhero movies, four major superhero film releases each year, each of those 4 years, between now and 2020, we're going to get two DC films and two Marvel films every single year, and that is not including anything that Fox is putting together, because Fox is going to have their own slate of movies, particularly pertaining to the X-Men. If Apocalypse is any indication, they are definitely trying to expand the X-Men universe. X-Men Apocalypse looks to be heading more in the direction of a big-budget ensemble, almost MCU-ish kind of movie. This is the first time that Bryan Singer has kind of transitioned his X-Men, his team, into the more larger-than-life, almost cosmic-level stuff. Apocalypse is a very different villain from William Stryker. He's a very different villain from Magneto. He's not really rooted in reality the way those villains are. Apocalypse is very much a can-be-anything, can-do-anything kind of villain, and it looks like we're going to get probably the largest-scale X-Men film to date, and we, of course, had Deadpool released this year, which was a, I don't want to say a surprise hit, but definitely did a lot better than people expected, and we know already it is confirmed that that is getting a sequel. So, you know, you put all those movies together, that's more than just four major superhero movie releases a year for the next 4 years. That is four plus whatever Fox comes up with, plus whatever any other studio decides to come up with. We have no idea what people are going to be putting out. And to set all that aside even, we have television. We have superhero TV shows centered on these comic book characters. Those are being produced and released. We've already had Daredevil, Jessica Jones come out. We have The Flash and The Arrow on the CW, as well as The Legends of Tomorrow, I believe is what it's called, that DC show, and Supergirl on CBS. And now we have even more shows being put into development specifically for Marvel. Marvel is putting out a Luke Cage solo series, and we're going to be getting Iron Fist soon. Iron Fist has been cast. it is a big time for this kind of thing. So I felt it was only fitting to discuss the MCU and just this ever-growing universe that Marvel is putting together. And I know that a lot of people have discussed the fact that this universe is massive by now, but so I wanted to get a little more specific with my discussion and talk about Infinity War. So let me begin with this. When the MCU really began, you know, Iron Man, which was released in 2008, I think at the time that Iron Man was released, there were no real solid plans to make the MCU what it is today. I think there were whispers at that, if I remember correctly, that time in my life, there were whispers about the internet, about the media, of potentially taking this wildly successful Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man and putting him in a universe with other superheroes, including Edward Norton's Incredible Hulk. But I don't think, at least I don't think, that Marvel was as organized as they are now with this just very clear-cut, unambiguous universe. These are the heroes that exist in this universe. These are the heroes that could potentially exist in this universe because we have the rights. Back then, I think it was a lot less clear where these characters would be headed and whether there would even be an Avengers movie. Although, you know, there is the after-credits scene at the end of Iron Man where it's kind of like, okay, an Avengers movie is coming. Even though they knew they wanted to do that much, I think it was still very unclear to them and unclear to us what else would exist in this world, in this galaxy, in this universe. Because, I mean, look at it. Now we have the Guardians of the Galaxy, we have Ant-Man, we have the Inhumans coming up, we have so many heroes that we never expected to see. And so I think that this is definitely the kind of universe that is growing at an exponential rate, like a real universe should. But there are, of course, problems to look out for. There are, of course, concerns that fans have, and rightfully so. Discussing specifically Avengers Infinity War, here, I've decided to break down my discussion into, you know, categories. So let me just start with the focus. Up until this point, we've had, you know, the MCU's been broken up into phases. Each of those phases introduces new characters, generally with an origin movie. And that origin movie is pretty much centered on that hero. It's a very, you know, hero-centric movie. You know, Captain America the First Avenger, that is Captain America's story. Even the sequel to that movie, Winter Soldier, that is Captain America's story, and it looks like Civil War will also be Captain America's story, but that is a different thing that we will address in just a second. Focus is going to be a big thing here because, so we have those, you know, those solo movies that it's very clear what they're focused on, and then we have the bigger team movies like the Avengers or even the Guardians of the Galaxy or even what looks like is going to be the Inhumans, where, sure, it's a team, but, you know, it's a very, I don't want to say small team, but it's a manageable number of heroes. You've seen all their origins, you understand who they are, where they're at, how they think, and now putting them together in these relatively small groups. You know, when you compare the first Avengers movie to the Avengers lineup in the comic books, I mean, there are so many more Avengers in the comic books that team up. If you look at the movie, it's much more streamlined. A lot of that is shaved away, and these core heroes are the ones that are working together. And that's for a variety of reasons. You know, Marvel doesn't have the rights to all of their superheroes anymore. Things of that nature, but also just, it is also, in my opinion, a focus problem. The first Avengers movie, I think, was so successful because it was great with its focus. It knew which scenes to use to develop which characters. It knew when to transition from one character to another. It just kind of felt like it knew where it was going and why it was going there. Avengers Age of Ultron was a little different. But we will also address that later. So, the thing about Infinity War is that this is going to be the first movie, and maybe even the only movie, of its kind in cinema. We're not just talking about an Avengers movie. This movie, if I am not mistaken, has around a cast of 67 characters. That's 67 characters. It is looking to be a culmination of every superhero flick that exists in this shared universe. It looks like it's going to be what all of the fans have been asking for, which is a team movie to the nth degree. Every team that is formed, every separate team is going to come together, and everybody is going to be involved in this fight with Thanos. That's what it's looking like. 67 characters, might even be 68, if I remember correctly. Now, of course, that's not just superheroes. That includes all of these superheroes. I mean, all of these superheroes have their own groups of secondary characters. So when you say, when you have a number of like 67 people in your movie, it definitely sounds like you're not just getting the superheroes, you're getting all of their secondary characters, or at least some of them, maybe even most of them. excuse me. So, of course, when you hear that, when you hear a number like 67 characters in one movie, your first concern should be focus. Is this movie going to be focused? When the first trailer or trailers were released for a movie, for example, like Amazing Spider-Man 2, everybody was asking sort of the same question, which was, is this movie going to be focused? Now, you know, depending on who you ask, you get different answers. If you ask me, that movie is not a very focused movie. It has a lot of moving pieces, it has a lot of characters. None of those characters truly get developed the way I think they deserve to be. So focus was a huge concern for that movie, and that movie was just about one superhero. That was just a Spider-Man movie. That movie was supposed to be setting up the Sinister Six, which would be all these Spider-Man villains. They would come together, team up, and fight Peter Parker. And so, you definitely had a lot of elements of, you know, the stories of other villains and other characters, but it was still a Spider-Man movie, by and large. Right now, we're not just talking about one hero's movie, you know. Civil War, you could say, is this movie going to be focused? You know, I don't know if it will or won't be, but I do know that this is a Captain America movie. Everything that I've seen has indicated to me that this will be Captain America's story. He will lead this effort. And so that sort of, I don't want to say eases my concerns about focus, but that it definitely seems more manageable to me. But when you look at a movie like Infinity War, Part 1 or 2, who is the focus going to be on? Now, you can argue it's probably going to be the Avengers. It's called the Avengers Infinity War, so it's probably safe to assume that the Avengers are going to be the focus, that they're going to be the heroes of the film. And that's all well and good. And if they do that, and they do that well, I will be very excited to see it. It is the Russo brothers. I believe Joe and Anthony, I think, are their names. Don't quote me on that, though. I could be wrong. They did Winter Soldier, which was fantastic. I loved it. They're doing Civil War, which by all accounts looks like it'll be good. And they are now doing Infinity War because Joss Whedon has backed down from that project. And so they've proven to us that they can handle multiple characters. We are yet to see if they can handle as many characters as, you know, the Avengers. Civil War will kind of prove to us if they can sort of, you know, balance that, play that balancing act well. But Infinity War, to me, just sounds like it's going to be a completely different beast. I'm very, very interested slash concerned to see how they're going to tackle a monster like Infinity War, because everyone's clamoring for the same thing. Everyone's saying, I want to see Rocket Raccoon fight with Iron Man. I want to see, Star-Lord talk to Ant-Man. I want to see all these great, likable characters on screen together, and I want to see them all interact with each other. And I think the producers want to see that too, because they know that if they do that, if they give us what we want, we will pay to see it. We've proven that to them time and time again. But again, I'll get into that later. So in terms of focus, I'm concerned about whose movie this really is going to be. You know, in the first Avengers movie, there was time taken to make almost sections of the movie. It looked like there was effort put in to relegate sections of the movie or certain plot lines to certain characters. So they all felt important. Thor had his own thing going on. The Hulk had his own thing going on. Captain America, Iron Man, Black Widow, Hawkeye, they had their own things going on. Even Loki had his own thing going on, and that made everybody very, very interesting to watch. That kept everybody dynamic over the course of the movie. And that was why I was so confident in Joss Whedon's ability to maintain focus throughout Infinity War. Well, Joss Whedon has quit Infinity War. He is no longer directing. He will be there in a producing capacity, but this is no longer his creative baby. And that, right off the bat, gives me pause. I'm not saying that I have less faith in the Russo brothers. I think that the Russo brothers are very talented filmmakers, But Joss Whedon has shown us that he is very dedicated to making these ensemble movies entertaining and to giving each character their due time and their due character development. If there were, one of my favorite aspects of Age of Ultron was how the character of Hawkeye was made so much more relevant than he was in the Avengers. Hawkeye, of course, had a part to play in the Avengers, and it was an important part to play, but I did not feel invested in Hawkeye until Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron, and this is a character that I always wanted to like, because Hawkeye's an underdog. Everyone's always talking about how Hawkeye has no powers, Hawkeye's lame, Hawkeye could never hold his own with the likes of the Avengers, but I always wanted to defend him, you know what I mean? So Joss Whedon proved to me with Age of Ultron that even a character like Hawkeye can be important and can be relevant, and you can gravitate towards him. So my big concern there, my number one concern with Infinity War will be focus, and Civil War will hopefully give me a little more faith in the ability of the Russo brothers to maintain focus throughout the movie. I'm very curious to see whose movie this will be and who the audience is going to invest themselves in, because the audience will gravitate towards characters, but you know, they always do, but, like, this is Infinity War. There are so many different characters, and we're invested in so many of them, and we all have our favorites from different movies. Who are we really going to want to root for in this movie? And that's going to be the big thing. Next up is conflict. The conflict of this movie, I'm interested to see how that will be handled, and here's why. You have one core enemy, and that enemy is Thanos. Thanos is being built up in the MCU right now as being the big baddie, the one that is going to take the, you know, the combined might of all these heroes to face. Thanos, with his gauntlet and with all the Infinity Stones, is supposed to be the ultimate bad guy. The only issue there remains is the fact that when you have a cast of 67 people, and a good number of those people are going to be all of the superheroes that are going to be set up between now and when this movie comes out, Infinity War, you can't have everyone fighting Thanos, which leads me to believe that they're going to do the Marvel thing with their villain, which is they're going to give him minions, they're going to give him an army, so that everybody can stay occupied. Everyone's going to be battling somebody, and only a few people, probably the Avengers, are going to take on Thanos himself. This disappoints me a bit, and I'm not saying that I'm disappointed in the movie right off the bat, because I haven't seen the movie, I have not seen the script for the movie, nor have I seen the synopsis. I can't confirm any of the things that I'm saying right now. This is all speculation. But I am concerned, because, and this does also tie into the focus thing, in order for us to be gripped, in order for us to be along for the ride, especially for this two-parter, we need to feel a sense of urgency. When I watch Batman v Superman and I see all these hints that Darkseid is coming and that Darkseid is going to be the reckoning of the Earth, and I get all these hints that he is just this unimaginable evil, I feel in my heart, I feel a sense of urgency when I watch that movie. I feel in my heart like we definitely need Batman to assemble the Justice League because Darkseid is coming and he's going to destroy everything. Thanos does not make me feel that way, and I hope that he will, but I don't... Number one, I don't see how, with this many heroes, Thanos could actually pose a challenge. Now, the odds are they're going to have Thanos, you know, kill some folks, some beloved characters, and we'll all go, oh no, you know what I mean? That'll sort of take us aback, and we'll be like, oh, I can't believe that they killed off so-and-so. Thanos really is super evil, super bad. But at the same time, I mean, just, you have so many heroes, and you have Thanos, and so if it's just Thanos alone, I don't see how this is going to be a compelling conflict or fight, you know what I mean? Sure, he'll have the Infinity Stones, but he'll probably be bending reality and stuff like that, but I mean, I am excited to see Thanos, because I think of him as being the match of the combined might of all of these heroes. And at the same time, I am not excited to see Thanos fight all these heroes, because I know that realistically, he will or would lose against all these people. It wouldn't be the most compelling of fights, is how I'll put it. He is so vastly outnumbered that I don't see how a fight scene featuring over a dozen heroes, and Thanos would be that compelling. Which leads me to believe that they intend for Thanos to have some sort of army of soldiers so that they can do the very Marvel Avengers thing where most of the team is off fighting these nameless, faceless minions while the rest of the team takes on the actual ringleader. And that kind of disappoints me because I did want to see Thanos kind of brought to the forefront. That was the big disappointing thing for me about Ultron, was the fact that he was so easy to defeat, that once the Avengers came together, that once they grouped up and got organized, Ultron was not that difficult of a villain to take over, or to take down. It didn't really feel to me like the Age of Ultron. If you look at the Age of Ultron comic book, the story arc, not just one comic book, but like this, the whole story arc, Age of Ultron, Ultron in that story has decimated the planet. He has proven to be one of the most deadly Marvel heroes, or villains, sorry, one of the most deadly Marvel villains. He has done so much unimaginable damage. And so when you see all the Avengers, you know, coming together and trying to stop him and get organized, it is compelling because you're thinking to yourself, they need to do this. They need to band together or else they won't survive. That's not how I felt about Ultron in Age of Ultron, the movie. I felt that Ultron was a bit too weak. Not that the performance was weak or that the writing was weak, just that he wasn't physically durable enough to go up against all these heroes. I mean, he's destroyed. His body is destroyed in that movie at least like two or three times, and that's kind of sad to see. And all of his minions are, you know, they're pretty much paper thin. I mean, they're torn through. The Hulk comes in and tears through these robot minions with such ease that there just isn't any urgency. So yeah, conflict is my big concern. Will Thanos actually pose a challenge? And if he does, will we care about every aspect, about every fight and every sort of battle? You know what I mean? If we're just watching all these people taking out, you know, nameless minions with no real powers or motivations, you know what I mean? Next thing that I will bring up, last thing that I'll bring up, my last concern is fan service. One of my big problems with Age of Ultron, and I have to believe that this is a problem that even Joss Whedon had with Age of Ultron, because, you know, he wasn't, if reports serve correctly, he wasn't very enthusiastic about the final product that was Avengers Age of Ultron. He was very exhausted by the end of that process, and the movie itself was not everything that he had wanted it to be, or that he had hoped it would be. And that was a sad thing to hear from him himself, but I can definitely understand why he felt that way. When you watch Age of Ultron, one of the big problems is that there is so much fan service crammed into the movie that plot points seem to exist solely so that we, the audience, we, the fans, get to see things that we've been asking for. The Hulkbuster fight, as awesome as it is, it feels like that whole sequence of events only happens so that we can see it happen, because we've been asking for the Hulkbuster for so long. Things of that nature. A lot of the choices of that film did not feel super motivated, and beyond just fan service, and all the Easter eggs and references, it also sort of started to feel as though there were things that Joss Whedon did not actually intend to have happen in this movie that Marvel and Kevin Feige and whoever's in charge wanted to have happen so that they could be more efficient about setting up future installments. So when you look at the post-credit scenes, the mid-credit and post-credit scenes of the first Avengers movie, you know, the mid-credit scene is awesome. It's a great teaser, and you're like, wow, I'm interested to see what this villain has to offer. Then the post-credit scene is, it's humorous, and it's really good humor. It's very funny, it's very cute. I love that post-credit scene. It's one of my all-time favorites. When you look at Age of Ultron, there's no love in the mid-credits scene. It's Thanos, you know, putting on the gauntlet. Spoiler alert, it's Thanos putting on the gauntlet, saying what he says, and walking out of a room. It looks very strung together at the last minute. It looks like there wasn't any love put into it. It looks like Joss Whedon was told, you need to have this thing happen somewhere in your movie so that we can set up this thing happening later, which was disappointing to see. So to, you know, take that sort of experience, my experience with Age of Ultron, and extrapolate that to what I expect the, I don't know, to what I am concerned the movie Infinity War will be. I think that in this movie's essence, it's almost like this movie was conceived as fan service. It was like from the very beginning, the head honchos were like, people really want to see all of these characters that we're creating together, whether these characters belong together or not, whether the Guardians of the Galaxy should even meet the Avengers ever is irrelevant. People want to see it, so we're going to make it happen. And that is sort of what it feels like the direction of Infinity War will be. Now, hopefully the Russos will prove with Civil War that they are more committed to telling a compelling story than they are to delivering fan service and to appeasing Disney and Marvel. But just think about, as much as I hope that will happen, just think about Civil War as a storyline. I can't help but feel as though we're only getting a Civil War movie because Civil War is one of the most famous story arcs in comic book history and in Marvel history. That is one of their big comic events. And so, there's a part of me that believes that the only reason we're getting this movie, Civil War, is because it would rake in so much cash, and because it would provide so much fan service, you know? So I hope that when it comes to Infinity War, the story will take precedence over cramming as many Easter eggs and as much cool stuff in as possible. I am also concerned, to a certain extent, about, where the MCU goes after Infinity War, because the Infinity War feels like such a massive escalation that there is almost nowhere to go afterwards. But I'm sure that, Infinity War will culminate in some, big, I don't want to say retcon, but, things will, I imagine things will, a new status quo will be set, the threat will be handled, and things will go back, either back to the way they were, or things will be, start anew, and we'll get different MCU characters, different characters from the comics that we haven't seen yet, and they will hopefully kind of take the torch from these older heroes that we've grown to attached to over the past few years. We'll see. Honestly, when it comes to Infinity War, we shall see. One more thing that I want to address very, very quickly is also just the fact that the movie, and this does tie into the focus thing, the fan service thing, this movie is going to be released in two parts, and there are two sides of that for me. The one side is I go, why does it need to be two parts? Is this about money? Is this about making as much money on this event as possible? Because think about, how much a single Avengers movie makes at the box office. Now you have a single Avengers movie that is actually two Avengers movies. So of course there is a high chance of profitability when you do something like that, a high return, as it is. The other side of this for me is also, is two parts even enough? Because when you're trying to construct a story this massive, and you want to focus on certain heroes, is two parts maybe too few? If you look at a comic event like Age of Ultron, or you look at the issues involved in Civil War, you'll see that these stories are told throughout numerous issues. It's not just one comic book called Civil War. It's a number of comic books, all released in succession, that tell this story. They're all multiple entries, and they all have their own focus. And this is not necessarily something that we've gotten in the MCU so far, just because when a movie comes out, I think the people at Marvel definitely want it to feel like a complete movie. And that's one of my other problems that I can discuss at a different time with Marvel, how they like to wrap up all their movies in a neat little bow, and how any cliffhangers usually feel forced, but I don't want to harp on that. In the comics, when big things happen and they involve lots and lots of characters, it takes multiple issues, generally, to tell those stories. And even individual heroes have multiple issues telling their stories, When you pick up a comic, Captain America comic book, that is just one issue in a whole story arc related to Captain America. So when you look at a movie that is as massive, a project as massive as Avengers Age of Ultron, you can't help but fear that two entries or two issues might not even be enough. And they might want to consider taking the approach that is more linked to comic books, which is sort of the multiple issues, multiple perspectives. If you look at Age of Ultron, you know, you start from, if I'm not mistaken, you start from like Black Widow's perspective, and then you shift around, you see what Hawkeye's doing or what Captain or what Iron Man's doing, and you hop around from person to person, from character to character, and that can be really advantageous to successfully telling a story of this scope and this scale. That is pretty much all I have to say on the subject of the MCU. I want to make it clear right now, I have the utmost faith and the utmost faith and trust in the Russo brothers to make a good movie. I'm not saying all this to disparage them or to say that I was disappointed with any of their work in the past. They've done some excellent work in the past. I'm very impressed with what they've achieved in their careers, in the spans of their careers. That all being said, I think deeply that there will be a lot of opportunities for this project to go wrong, and I think that these guys should be prepared for that in the event that that should happen. I'm not telling you not to see Marvel movies, by the way. I know I was critical of Marvel movies. I'm of the school of thought that in this modern day and age, we're not actually critical enough of Marvel films. I think we let a lot of things slide in Marvel movies that we don't necessarily let go in other movies. You know, there are things that we will accept about MCU entries that we get mad about when we watch a DC movie. I just think that it's more fair to be critical across the board and to think of everything with a more analytical mind, breaking things apart, dissecting them, and trying to make them better. That's just how I think, though. That's just how I feel. I am a movie nerd, so I may be alone in thinking that way. I will like to end the discussion on the MCU here. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or anything you'd like to contribute about that discussion, please contact me. There are many ways to do just that. Twitter, Facebook, whatever you want to do. So I will end here with. I began the episode with a throwback. I'd like to end here with something that I'd like to include on a regular basis in these episodes, and that is the terrible movie of the day. This is not a review. This is not a discussion. This is just a movie that I thought of today. That sucks, and that I wanted to put in the episode, and just sort of, these are movies that I want to remind people of. When I do a throwback, and when I do a terrible movie of the day, it's just because I want to remind people that these things exist, because there are so many movies out there, and of course we don't keep all of them in the forefronts of our minds. We forget about movies, we don't think about movies constantly unless you're me, and so it can be very important. It's important to me that everybody, every once in a while, is reminded of what movies exist, more specifically, what terrible movies exist or have existed. Today's terrible movie of the day is Speed 2 Cruise Control, starring Sandra Bullock, Jason Patrick, and Willem Dafoe as the movie's villain. This film centers on a couple taking a romantic Caribbean cruise on a ship in the Caribbean. Of course, just like in Speed, they discover that the ship has been tampered with, much like the bus from Speed, and that it is set for a collision course with a oil tanker, or oil rig, if I'm not mistaken, and it is a pulse-pounding, exhilarating, thrill-ride mess of a movie. This movie sucks. It's so, so, so bad. Speed 2 Cruise Control. What a... Is that not just the most 90s horrible title you've ever heard for a movie? Speed 2 Cruise Control. It's called Cruise Control because it takes place on a cruise ship. If that movie was released today, it would not be released today. And if it was, it would not be called what it is called. I hate this movie so much. And this is coming from somebody who loves the first Speed. Keanu Reeves, such a great guy, such a great actor. He is in some terrible, terrible movies. Keanu Reeves did not return for Speed 2 Cruise Control. Keanu Reeves, I have to imagine, read the script and said to himself, you know what, Keanu, you could do without this career choice. You could do without this movie, this paycheck. This movie sucks. And I mean, Willem Dafoe, what wasted potential, man. When you have Willem Dafoe as your villain, you best come up with the best script you can for that situation. You better Sam Raimi that and make that villain iconic. Goodness gracious me. Anyways, that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to hear me rant and rave and talk. Expect another episode hitting the web as soon as I make one. Again, thank you guys. Big thank you to Title Race for this opportunity. And that is the end of the first episode of Take 5. As you can tell, I don't have an outro, nor do I have any idea how to end any episode of anything. Peace out, and stay classy, my friends.